are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama here on your Wednesday afternoon. It's hump day and we got here quickly. 2 days into our work week so far. You know, I had an interesting discussion with Jacob, who's behind the board with us today. He said, which is better as far as 4 day weeks are concerned? Would you rather have Friday off or would you rather have Monday off? Lance, what are your thoughts on this as we start our Wednesday show off?
I'd rather have Friday off, honestly. I think that's kind of where I'm sitting on it. Whenever you have Monday off, there's that anticipation of knowing that you're going to have to the next day get up and go back to work, whereas with Friday you're like, "Hey, I got 3 days of a week or a 3 day weekend going on here. Let's relax and let's settle in and let's enjoy it."
This was exactly my point. Because Noah, I'm going to go ahead and spoil your answer. You like starting on Tuesday. My whole point was that you don't have to deal with the Sunday scaries twice, because, you know, you're dealing with it on Sunday, but then you're like, okay, I don't have tomorrow off. I don't have to go into work tomorrow. But then Monday, you do it again. You do it all over again. Whereas if you have Friday off, you basically have two Fridays. Thursdays is Friday Junior, and then Friday is Friday.
See, but on the flip side of that, I don't really get the Sunday scaries with these 3 day weekends.
How?
I do, but it's kind of like relief. It's like, oh, I've got to go to work tomorrow. Wait, no, I don't. And then I'm relieved. It's like waking up at 4 a.m. and it's like, oh, I don't have to wake up for another 3 hours. That's a good feeling.
It is.
So you can see the benefits. It's just kind of
for
how
me,
you look at it.
Before talking to you about it, I was very split 50-50 on it, and it's just going through my head. I think it would depend on the week.
Also,
it would depend on the week.
If you get Friday off, you know that there's this finite end on Sunday, right?
True.
And so
you
don't get that relief. Right. You don't get that relief, though, like I get on getting Monday off. I know when I get to Sunday that it's not the end. So I'm dreading on Fridays, if I get a Friday off, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I am dreading in that scenario Sunday still. But now I get an extra day. It's all the way that your mind views it. Your buddy had an interesting take on this. He said it was simple math.
Yeah, simple math. Having Friday off equals Friday on Thursday, Friday on Friday. You have two Fridays. That's it.
That is a good point.
That's the thing.
Is a good point. It's simple mathematics.
Because here's the thing. Every Sunday, you know, you pretty much sit back and relax. And like during football season, you're just watching the NFL. During this time period, you're watching golf, NASCAR, baseball, NBA now. Whatever it is. So it's just kind of sit back and relax. Whereas if you have Monday off, you feel like, should I go out and do something or should I relax? And then you do it again on Monday. So I think for me personally,
Y'all might be bringing me around to this.
I like to be more active. So, you know, Thursday night, do something. Friday, do it again. And then you have all Sunday to rest again. So,
you know, you never get Fridays off when you get into the workforce.
No,
not a thing. It's Mondays. Mondays are the 3 day weekend. So you guys are going to get used to that as y'all get older, but still, you forget about Fridays off. That's not a thing once you get out of college. It really wasn't a thing in high school or college anyway, but there were occasionally one, but that is not a thing when you get out of the workforce. Not at all. But you know who's been busy this week since the start of June? You know who's been busy this week, Lance?
Auburn.
Auburn football, busy on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, that's right. They've got a lot of recruits coming in. I believe they had a 3-star and a 5-star defensive tackle on campus yesterday. I saw a lot of pictures from that. And then today, they've got a lot of players coming in, starting off with Mykael Williams. I believe he's a defensive tackle, 5-star recruit out of Columbus, Georgia. 23rd overall player in the country.
Hardaway High School, though.
Yeah, that's Hardaway High School. I'm sorry. But Georgia is currently the favorite, but Auburn obviously has him on campus today. Another defensive tackle. Auburn's had 3 or 4 defensive tackles in the past couple of days. It's obvious that they're going after that position hard. early. Powell Gordon, a Auburn commit, actually plays at Auburn High School. Linebacker is on campus today for a visit. Number 21 recruit in the state of Alabama. Curtis Perry, again, defensive tackle out of Montgomery. And then Quashawn Sapp, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, offensive tackle slash guard out of Leesburg, Georgia, a four-star recruit. So Auburn's got some legitimate players. Wow, actually, there's a lot more. RJ Moss, Antavius Woody, Omar White. There's two other defensive tackles. So that's four or five today combined for the Tigers. That's, wow, they're going after that position hard.
You can go and find a good list of this. Keith Niebuhr wrote about it, 24/7 Sports. That's where you can go find a good list of the guys that are on campus for Auburn in terms of recruiting today. Buckle up. That's what I tweeted out this morning from the ESPN 106.7 account. I said, buckle up. It's a big Wednesday for Auburn football. You talk about the defensive tackle position, and when I go and look at Michael Williams out of Hardaway High School in Columbus, Georgia, the five-star defensive lineman at 6'5", 265, and then I look at Curtis Perry on his 24/7 Sports recruiting profile. He's at 6'3", 267. Those don't shout nose tackle. Those shout 3-4 defensive end right now at the collegiate level. They'll bulk up a bit, but they won't play nose tackle. You're looking at Colby Wooden types in what they're trying to recruit. They're trying to fill out this 3-4 front.
Right, and they definitely need help there because as we talked about, I believe it was on yesterday's show, Auburn's losing a lot on the defensive side of the football, and they got to be able to get guys outside linebackers specifically that can be able to rush the passer, that can come in as freshmen in a season or two and get time to develop. It's something that Auburn's not really had a lot of as far as depth goes, that outside linebacker edge rusher position, but they're going hard at those guys today.
You know, fun fact here about Curtis Perry, the four-star number 8 defensive lineman in the class of 2022. He plays at Park Crossing. Guess who Auburn High School plays in game 1 at home at Doug Sanford Stadium?
Park Crossing,
that's right. And I would imagine that there's going to be some coaches at that ball game to take a look or at least get to be around and recruit a guy like Curtis Perry. I'm sure once they make the trip, I mean, you don't even have to go far. It's right in your own backyard.
Yep, there you go.
You bring up I don't know why I'm having a hard time saying that. Powell Gordon. You bring up Powell Gordon, the Auburn High commit. I've got to see him a couple times in person. The guy is virtually unblockable at the high school level, a machine, a high motor. He puts a lot of effort and energy into every single play. Can switch from – he's really right now it appears to be a 3-4 outside linebacker. If he were to come to Auburn, be like an edge rusher rather than a hand-in-the-dirt defensive end. It would be a 4-3 defensive end or 3-4 outside linebacker, much more likely with Auburn's scheme shift to be a 3-4 outside linebacker. If folks are looking for something to do on a Friday night, even if you don't have an Auburn High School connection, go out and watch Auburn High play some football. Powell Gordon's a treat.
He really is, and again, it's another position of need for Auburn. He'd be filling that T.D. Moultrie role. I believe T.D. Moultrie is probably going to be playing outside linebacker this season for the Tigers, but next year he'd be competing with Dylan Brooks, another highly touted guy. I believe Dylan Brooks is a four-star. Powell Gordon currently sitting as a three-star prospect. I can only imagine that can only go up during Gordon's senior season, but it'll be interesting to see Auburn gain depth and have competition next season at these key positions in the trenches, because as Derek Mason said, he knows that battles are won in the trenches in the SEC. You got to be able to get offensive and defensive line bulked up first before you go out and recruit other positions. You actually look at this list of the guys that they have on campus today.
It's heavy defense right now.
It's heavy defense, but
heavy defensive line.
Is it all players that aren't skill positions? It looks like it.
Well, there's a safety.
There's
on
a safety.
The list.
Okay, I'm sorry. Outside of the safety, it's all guys in the trenches, and I think guys like Powell Gordon and Dylan Brooks. It's going to be really fun to see them compete against each other next season for that starting role. But it's depth. It's depth for Auburn, and I think that's a really good thing moving forward that they're going after the trenches first.
You know what? This is a reminder of. This is a reminder, and you're talking about the trenches. Not only we know how important Auburn's biggest need. And we talked about this yesterday, and both of us ranked this as number 1. Auburn's biggest need in this recruiting class is offensive line. Specifically, if you wanted to point out a spot on the offensive line, it's tackle, namely left tackle. But Auburn's going to bring in a lot of offensive tackles. I still think that there's a need for some guards and centers as well. They need the interior. Auburn's losing a lot of offensive linemen out of this year's class. 5 seniors will graduate off of Auburn's starting offensive line as it stands right now on the depth chart. And then not to mention some guys behind these players, like a Brendan Coffey and Austin Troxell, who really haven't seen the field that much, they are seniors and could graduate as well. Now, last year doesn't count, and they could come back again, but and they haven't seen the field, so you wonder if they would make that type of decision, but you lose a lot after this year. So this is a revamping year for Auburn, a rebuilding year, if you will, on the offensive line, because you don't want next year to be horrible. It's crucial. Auburn's already behind by a year or two in terms of classes on the offensive line because of how poor the previous recruiting coaching staff was at recruiting the offensive line. But what's also important to note that I'm reminded of when I look at these list of players is how many defensive linemen are on this list. Auburn is recruiting a new defensive line to fit the scheme change of Derek Mason bringing the 3-4 to the Plains. You've got to go and get special types of defensive linemen for that. It's a whole different system than what Auburn was doing with the 4-2-5.
And it's interesting to see just how many different guys that they're picking out on day two to bring to campus as far as that edge in that defensive tackle position goes. Like you said, they're trying to find guys that really fit their scheme, and to have so many guys come on immediately I think speaks a lot to where this coaching staff wants to go first and how important it is. You talk about guys that are coming in that will potentially be defensive tackles. There's also another guy, an Antavius Woody, who is listed as an offensive tackle slash defensive tackle, 6'5", but only 270 pounds. So we could see Auburn go after another guy there that we've seen in the past in the Gus Malzahn tenure, him flip guys in the trenches from offense to defense whenever he needs them and defense to offense. That's another guy that could be versatile. Interesting to see how that guy pans out.
And we haven't talked about needs specifically on the defensive line because that's been a point of emphasis in every recruiting class for Auburn under the previous coaching staff. But if I was going to point out a need on this Auburn defense outside of, and really this recruiting class is going to be important for the defensive side of the ball as well, because you're expecting a lot of guys to move on to the NFL out of the defensive backfield. You could see as many as 4 or 5 guys out of that defensive backfield make the jump, and that would be the worst case for Auburn next year if that many players left. At its base, you know you're going to lose Roger McCreary and Smoke Monday, but players like Dreshon Miller, Nehemiah Pritchett, Jalen Simpson are all fringe guys that could go to the league if they have excellent years and NFL teams take a look at them and say, this is somebody that can help us. And if they are intrigued by a 4th or a 5th round selection and they don't want to come back for another year of college, well, they could go on to the next level. Sometimes you see that where guys aren't necessarily preoccupied with worrying about coming back to college for another year to increase their draft stock. That doesn't always happen. Now, defensive back is a position where I think it's a little bit more less injury-riddled and less contact-riddled, so guys are more prone to spend an extra year in college like Roger McCreary did this year, but you don't always see that. Some guys are ready to go ahead and take the step to the next level and try and go ahead and get into the league. So worst case for Auburn, you could see like 5 guys leave the defensive backfield. I think Auburn's losing both of their interior linebackers in Zacoby McClain and Owen Papo. But although you're not going to see a ton graduate or take off for the next level off of the defensive line, I still view it as a need for Auburn because of the scheme shift. I look past at all these different positions. Is there a true nose tackle at defensive tackle for Auburn in 2022? Once Tyrone Truesdale and Tony Fair leave?
I don't think there is. No, I don't think there is. And you talk about this second. I would say that the secondary as a whole can be prone to leaving for the NFL before they should. In my opinion, guys like Roger McCreary staying, I think that's fantastic, but you got to be able to bring in guys that are highly touted in the SEC to replace these guys that are leaving for the NFL. Guys like Smoke Monday this season, he's going to be leaving at that safety spot. And again, who's Auburn looking at today? Kamari Wilson, 5-star safety out of Fort Pierce, Florida. He's a guy that's currently looking at Georgia right now, potentially to commit to the Bulldogs, but Auburn needs depth. They really need depth. I think it's the most important thing for Auburn getting this recruit class is depth, not necessarily guys that will stand out and start, because I believe they have some of those guys on this roster already for 2022, but they need depth at these key positions.
I spoke a little bit about this yesterday. Folks are pegging Auburn this year as a 6 or a 7 win team. That seems to be the pulse when you take it amongst fans. Also, when you're out there looking at previews and predictions at various media outlets, they're pegging Auburn as a 6-7 win team. See Paul Feinbaum or any other major media personality saying, I don't trust this Auburn team this year. And sure, that centers around a new coaching staff, a coaching change, a complete change across the top. That's going to make people uncomfortable. When the only coach that you return from last year's team is Cardell Williams, that's going to make people uncomfortable because there's a change at the top and you're installing new systems, you're installing new schemes. that there are growing pains associated with that, right? But when you look at this Auburn roster, and a big reason why, folks, if you were listening to talk radio, if you were listening to people talking about Gus Malzahn at the end of his tenure last year, right before he was fired, people were saying, give this guy another year, because think about how experienced this team is going to be in 2021. You look at the roster, you see a lot of seniors at many different position groups. I've already talked about the experience that's in the defensive backfield, the experience that's in the linebacker core, the experience that's on the offensive line. You're super young at wide receiver, but everywhere else, you are loaded with experience with guys who have been playing for two or three seasons now on the field and have been getting significant snaps. Majority of these guys are leaving after this year. You know what the rebuilding is? You know when that year is going to take place? Next year.
Yep.
The year you should be uncomfortable with as far as talent is concerned is next year, which makes this recruiting class for you to go and get some studs of guys that can contribute right away. Depth is important. I'm with you there. They need some depth, but I also think you're looking, this recruiting class this year, you're looking to get some studs. This is the first class for Harsin, which means these guys 3 years from now, you're expecting this class to get you where this coaching staff wants to be at. This is the class that you bring in that you're trying to help you achieve your goals, to help you get your extensions on your contract, right?
Right.
And if things don't go well recruiting for Auburn this year, it could be a very rocky start for this coaching staff, because next season, and I've already broke this down for you, all the guys graduating, next year's the year where the growing pains are. I don't think it's as much this year. Of course, you look at the schedule for Auburn, you get Akron and Alabama State through the first 2 weeks to try and figure some things out schematically, get your feet underneath you in a new offensive system. I think it's going to be plug and play on the defensive side of the football. I don't think that that's going to be an issue. I trust that side of the ball in terms of the coaching staff a whole lot more, being able to inject the new system and just see ball, go and get ball, go and tackle the guy with the ball. I think that that's a little bit more plug and play. But on the offensive side, that is not. There's a whole lot more terminology that you're trying to bake in, not to mention you're trying to develop a quarterback still that has not been performing up to par. You're trying to improve an offensive line that's in the same boat. There's a lot more wrong with the offense than there is with the defense, right? And you only get two games really to try and piece it together before you have to play substantial competition against Penn State on the road. After that Penn State game, you try to take what you learn and you try and work on it against Georgia State at home. Then you've got the SEC schedule. In week five on the road at LSU, you better have things figured out because you need to hit the ground running. You can't start out SEC play 0-2. You can't. The schedule helps Auburn to try and pull things along a little bit on a step-by-step basis. But, and we know this, this is for everybody in the SEC. You can't start out the SEC in the hole 0-2. You can't take two losses right away. The time is not anybody's friend in the league because the schedule is so tough. You have to figure things out quickly. It's fortunate for Auburn that Auburn gets four non-conference games instead of having to play an SEC team within the first 3 weeks of the season, like you typically see in LSU occasionally in a week three. Other years, they're in the middle of the season. I know some of that's changed because of the Georgia-Alabama split from the Amen corner at the end of the year. But the schedule, for me, is favorable for Auburn to figure some things out because you get all non-conference to open up the year, and those don't weigh as much at the end of the season than they do in your conference. That you need to be winning your conference games. Auburn can afford to lose to Penn State. I think it's more important that Auburn beats LSU, right? And so, for me, you look at the offensive side of the ball. If they can figure some things out in the first 4 weeks of the season, get to that week five, beat LSU, I've got some optimism for this football team, and I think that's what's going to happen. But next year's the year where you have total loss of everything, and you're hoping you develop to Bo Nix to the point where he can elevate the game on the offensive right side of the ball, because you're losing almost everything on this football team.
That's what I was going to say, is back to what will happen a year from now. As far as I agree with you, I think Auburn needs contributors, but I think at the skill position, especially on the offensive side of the ball, they're not going to need guys that can start right away. They'll have three junior receivers most likely starting. They'll have Bo Nix in his senior season, and then they'll have Tank Bigsby as a junior, hopefully coming back, but they lose that offensive line.
Skill positions are great on the offensive side of the ball. It's
right,
the offensive line.
You lose the offensive line, and then you essentially lose a lot of key pieces. I would just say the entire defense. I'm not saying like every single guy's leaving, but really important key pieces.
But if they're important, they're gone.
Right, and they will be gone. So Auburn's going to need to have some guys that can step in that are 4 or 5-star guys, I think especially in that secondary. That's really, really important to me, to have that secondary loaded and have a lot of depth at that spot. But I agree with you. I think there's got to be a nice mix and a balance between depth and guys that can contribute immediately next season. And this recruiting class is really, really important because, again, like you mentioned, the rebuild year is not this season. Auburn's got the tools to win 8 or 9 games this season. It's next year whenever they lose everybody, especially on that defense.
And you make a great point there. They've got the tools to win 8 or 9 games. I even think talent-wise, they would have the tools to win 10. The thing is, everything changed when Gus Malzahn was fired. If Gus Malzahn was the head coach entering this year, preseason magazines, preseason predictions would have Auburn winning 8 or 9 games. But because Auburn had a coaching change, people are predicting Auburn to go 3-5 in the SEC, 7-5, 6-6, because there was a coaching change. That's why people are pegging Auburn that way. It's not the talent. It has nothing to do with the talent. I don't know how you look at this roster, and you look at the defense, and you look at some of the positions that they have on the offensive side of the ball between Bo Nix and Tank Bigsby. I don't know how you look at this roster and you think, oh, yeah, this team's losing to Arkansas, or this team's losing to Ole Miss, or this team's losing to Mississippi State. I don't know how people see that from a talent perspective. I understand if you want to talk about coaching changes and whatnot. I get that. But if Malzahn was the head coach, Auburn is pegged as an 8-win team out the gates in preseason predictions. And that's just not the way that people view Auburn right now, and it's all because of a coaching staff. I think that has changed the way that people view the trajectory. Look, you better go ahead and brace yourself for next year, because I am not optimistic about 2022 for Auburn based on everything that Auburn's losing. I will trust talent more than the coaching change this year. But next year, they're going to have to do some work as far as developing some of these guys behind this experience. And they haven't really gotten to see the field. You look at the linebacker room, and then we'll take a break in a second. You look at the linebacker room. Auburn hasn't rotated the linebackers. They've had Tisdall and Steiner on the roster for 2 years now. They haven't seen the field. And that's because the previous coaching staff didn't rotate guys and get guys playing time on the defensive side of the ball. They didn't sub. They had the same two linebackers all year long. That's how two linebackers combined for over 200 tackles. That shouldn't happen. They should have gotten guys experience on that previous coaching staff, and they just didn't, and that's hurting this coaching staff. There's some, as far as numbers are concerned for me, it's not adding up for 2022, and that's making this recruiting class all the more crucial. We'll be back on the other side of this break. You're listening to On the Line.
Are on the line, live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390. Or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line. Noah Gardner and Lance Daw with you on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open. Follow Lance and I on Twitter, at Point Gardner, at Daw Pound. Continuing our previous segment that we ended hour number one with, ranking teams you want to see Auburn play that they have not played yet. At 5, I had BYU. At 4, Oklahoma State. Lance, at 5, you had BYU. At 4, Iowa State. Let's give our top 3 now. Who do you have at 3?
So I debated whether or not I should put Oklahoma State higher on this list, but I ended up putting them at number 3 just simply because I think the other two matchups would be a lot more fun. I believe our top 2 is the same, but we'll get to that in a moment. Oklahoma State, I just think it would be a really fun game. Whenever you're looking at some of these teams that Auburn hasn't played, you wouldn't want to say, oh, I think they should play the Charlotte 49ers. You want to look at these teams that they haven't played and say, I want to see the funnest matchup, the most competitive games. And I think Oklahoma State, just like Iowa State, would be one of them. I think Mike Gundy's a pretty good coach. I think if you had Gus Malzahn still at Auburn, I think this would be a fantastic game because I think those coaches are on very similar levels. But I think Brian Harsin would probably take the edge. And again, I think talent would win out as far as SEC play goes, but it would be a fantastic home and home to schedule.
And going back to the genesis of this list, it's about teams that Auburn has never played. Auburn's played a lot of good teams in their history. The two teams that didn't make my list that are Power 5 teams that it would probably be pretty decent matchups, at least in this day and age. Iowa and Iowa State did not make my list. Neither of those games really just spoke to me. I don't want to get embroiled in a 13-9 kick fest against Iowa, because you look at Iowa week one, they'll play like a North Dakota State or someone from the Midwest, and they'll beat them like 16-12, and you're like, what happened? This is gross. And I was at the game where Auburn beat LSU on all field goals that ultimately led to Les Miles getting
fired. The 18-13 game?
Yes, I was at that one. And they're not fun.
No, No, it's not. But Iowa has such a passionate fan base in that stadium. I love it. Yeah. I love
Do
their
they
traditions.
Make your list?
No, they did not make my list, really?
Iowa State did, but not Iowa.
No, simply because I think the Iowa State game would be a lot more fun. I agree with you. I think the Iowa game would be really... The game itself would probably not be fun, but the atmosphere would be.
I'm weighing home and homes here as well, and I think, man, going out to Utah, BYU's campus is really pretty. The mountains.
The mountains. I was looking at those pictures. I mean... It's beautiful.
I don't know if there's anything to do in Provo other than go out into the wild and just think about life. I don't know if that's I don't know if there's much more to do there, but the campus is pretty and the surrounding scenery is pretty, so that's probably pretty fun. Oklahoma State, I don't know what's going on at Stillwater. I don't know what that's about, but that always seems to be a pretty fun environment to go and watch on television when you see Bedlam when Oklahoma's playing at Oklahoma State. That always seems to be a pretty fun environment. I get into my top three now, and this is also weighed as far as at home and home, and also one where I think Auburn would win both matchups, and it would be fun to say, oh yeah, Auburn played this team, they're going to win both games, and it might be a pretty fun road trip too, because I've never been here before. Pittsburgh. Bringing Pittsburgh to Auburn, and Jacob, I got to give him credit for this, I didn't even think about this team, and then I was like, yeah, they may not be one of the best teams that Auburn could play across this group, because Iowa and Iowa State's programs are definitely in much better places than Pittsburgh right now, but a road trip to Pittsburgh, never been to the city before, probably, at least you get to see it, it's a big city, a major city in the United States, and then you get them coming to your place, you're going to win.
You're going to win.
But it still is a Power 5 opponent in your non-conference schedule.
I think y'all are a little too confident in beating Pitt. Pitt is the ultimate catastrophe in college football. They beating Clemson a few years ago.
That's true.
Beating Miami.
I like about them.
But you're not playing them in week 12. You're playing them in week 2.
That is
true. You haven't given universe enough time to create this energy that is the catastrophe.
You're not playing them in week 12 as an undefeated, unanimous number one
exactly.
team.
They're not going to sneak up on you.
But look, Tennessee's playing Pittsburgh this year, week 2 or week 3. Let's see how that goes before we try and bite this off.
Is it not the opening game? I thought it was the opening game.
No, their opening game is Bowling Green.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. That's right.
So it's week 2 against Pittsburgh. Okay. Cool. Well, good luck for them then. So you've given your three. We're into our top two now.
At number two, I have Boise State, and I would probably not have them this high. I may not even have them on the list had it not been simply for the fact that Brian Harsin is now our head coach. Of course, you got to think about Smurf Turf. That would be incredible if you were to schedule a home and home. I would love to go to that game.
Oh, it's got to be a home and home. I do not want to see that in a neutral site. It's also my number two. We have the same top two here, I'm sure. You have to make that a home and home, right?
I think so, because it would be a really tough game to see them maybe play in Arlington to open the season, or maybe Chick-fil-A kickoff game.
Which Boise State has played in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game before.
Just want to point that out.
They played twice. I think they played Georgia and Ole Miss.
I think
in
so.
Atlanta.
Yes, I think they did. But I would love to see Auburn fans get to travel to Idaho and get to see that field. It'd be again, that's another really fun atmosphere, and unlike Iowa, it would be a really fun game. So.
You best believe I'm making the trip to Boise, Idaho if Auburn is playing on the blue turf, because I will never go to Boise, Idaho
again
ever in my life. I would assume I wouldn't. I mean, something may happen one day where I have to go there, but I would assume that I will not be going to Boise, Idaho. And if I have the opportunity to go and watch a football game there, Auburn playing out there. Now, for Auburn, would you, if you're the Auburn football program, would you want to schedule a home and home with Boise State? Probably not. Because there is a definite home field advantage from playing on blue turf. It's got to be trippy.
Yeah, I agree with you. And whenever you think about Boise State coming to play Auburn on the road, I mean, Boise State's had consistent success against Power 5 teams, even whenever they're playing at their place, not just at a neutral site game. So it would definitely be a tough series for Auburn, absolutely. But, you know, with guys that like Chris Peterson and Brian Harsin not there anymore, I question their ability to continue their sustained success, even though they are a prestigious program in their conference, respectfully. So it'd be a fun matchup, and it'd be really difficult for Auburn, but a lot of it hinges on who they hire as their head coach, and can he sustain success?
And I'm going to continue to bang my drum on this one, and I've been saying this for years. We got to make Auburn-Notre Dame happen. That's number one on both of our lists. You got to make Auburn-Notre Dame happen.
The only reason that Notre Dame is number one on my list, I have a lot of personal bias against teams like Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Alabama, teams like Georgia. I just don't like them. And if there was a team that I could just love to see Auburn just beat up on, it would be Notre Dame.
I don't know if we'd see Auburn just like beat up on them, but it'd be some fun games.
In an Ian Bookless Notre Dame team, I think Auburn could beat. This also, season, if they were matching up, I think they would.
Think about how many Georgia teams, or not Georgia teams, Georgia fans flocked to South Bend, Indiana for that game. There were Indiana folks talking about they'd get barked at in their own bars. You know? I mean, like, this is their territory. They got barked at by Georgia fans all over the place. You know, Auburn fans would make the same type of trip, the same type of exodus, but they would not bark at people.
I don't think so. I think it would be
smile and wave. It'd be nice to you.
It'd be a much nicer environment. They hit you with a war eagle, and then they'd be on their way. It's just the reason that they would be so nice is because they would know that their team would be about to destroy Notre Dame in at least a 40-point blowout.
There's your personal bias. I love it. I love it.
I don't like Notre Dame, folks.
I don't know and if all the programs really, in a place right now where they would blow out Notre Dame, but I definitely really, think it would be some fun game.
There's not really like a directed hate. It's just like there's no reason why. It's just like I don't like Notre Dame, and I don't like Georgia. I don't like Alabama.
You've probably been around a more seasoned and older college football fan that has told you about the years and years of bias and favoritism that Notre Dame has received.
And
in
they
the
still
polls.
Get it. They still get it.
Not as much, I feel like, they used to, though.
I think that's fair. But recently, there are times where it's just like, man, how? You beat Vanderbilt like by 6 points. How? Why? Why did you move up?
I haven't had problems with them in the playoffs. Every time they've made the playoffs, I've been like, all right, they deserve to make the playoff. And when they made the national championship in 2012, albeit they got destroyed, they were undefeated.
How many SEC teams do you think could have beaten that 2012 Notre Dame team?
I don't know. I'd have to think back to that to the 2012 football season and try to remember who all was good that year.
Not Auburn.
Yeah, that's
Auburn
right.
was not one of yeah. Auburn would not right. beat Notre Dame in 2012.
Yeah, 3-9. Georgia definitely would have.
Yeah. Georgia would have. Florida would have.
They made the SEC title that year.
Was LSU good that year?
LSU was good. They had Odell and Landry. Yeah. I think they probably would have given them a run for their money. South Carolina's another team that I think would have been competitive.
Connor Shaw.
If Marshawn Lattimore hadn't have gotten hurt, I think that would have been a really competitive game. So there are a few teams. If you look at it, it's like. Anyway.
But you didn't have a good argument at keeping Notre Dame out of the national championship in 2012.
No, I think they deserve to be there. I think they play
a lot of Iowa State.
That's right, because Oklahoma State didn't make it that year. But you play, it wasn't Kansas State towards the top that year in the rankings as well?
I believe so. That was the Colin Klein year.
Yeah. Colin Klein
they played
years,
in the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah.
That's right. And so you look at it, you know, just saying. I don't think that you had a good argument to keep Notre Dame out. Of course, people dislike it. They have the same, especially around here, people have the same bias against them as you do. You just don't like them. And you felt like the favoritism has been there. And sure, there was probably favoritism back in the day that I wasn't alive for. But now I don't think we've seen it. I don't think we see it as much now.
To make it clear, I think they deserve to be in the national championship that season. I'm just saying that there are a lot of teams in the landscape that probably could have given that not necessarily that they didn't deserve it, but there are a lot more talented teams out there.
Looking back at our Twitter poll from yesterday, we've put a new one up. We'll get to that in a second. But yesterday's On the Line poll: which Auburn road game would you go to if you could only choose one? The results went about as expected. I think there was a little bit more love for LSU than I originally thought, but Penn State comes out on top at 73% of the vote, LSU at 19%, Texas A&M at 7%, and South Carolina / Arkansas at 1%. Who voted for that?
I was about to say, you and I were talking about that earlier. It's like, that might have been a misclick. They might have not intentionally done that. And then you're like, well, I don't know. Maybe somebody wants to go see South Carolina. Maybe they want to see Auburn just destroy South Carolina or Arkansas on the road. But I would much rather go and see Penn State or LSU. I have a really hard time picking between one of those two games because both of them are winnable. But I think the LSU game might be a little bit more winnable than that Penn State game. And so it gives me makes it really tough to decide, okay, do I want to see a 50-50 matchup at Penn State or do I want to see maybe a 55-45 matchup at LSU and the environments be similar, but it'd be a really good experience overall. So,
well, this leads me to our Twitter poll for today. On the Line poll, which game is Auburn more likely to win, LSU or Penn State? Find that on the ESPN 106 Twitter account at ESPN 106.7. I selected LSU for this, and this is a really hard one for me because I believe LSU is the more talented football team between these two. I believe their quarterback situation, despite the fact that they don't know who is the starting quarterback for this upcoming year, I believe that whoever starts is probably going to be better than Clifford at Penn State. I believe that LSU is more talented than Penn State, but my reasoning for LSU is I'm looking at this like a test. Auburn has 5 weeks to get ready for LSU's test.
Yep.
They have 3 weeks to get ready for Penn State's test. The amount of time that you have to study for those two, I like Auburn's chances of performing better in the LSU game and than they do in Happy Valley in week three, where they're still trying to figure some things out. Auburn's every bit as talented, if not more talented, with what they've got coming back on their roster this year than both of these football teams. I would say all of these teams, as far as talent is concerned, are very close to each other. If not, Auburn is more talented. The question is, of these three teams who are all trying to figure something out going into 2021, who's got the most figured out when you play them? Auburn's not used to playing in Happy Valley. Auburn's at least somewhat used to playing in Baton Rouge. You know what to expect. It's not a dramatic road trip 14 hours away to Pennsylvania. There's just more, I feel like, going for Auburn going to Baton Rouge, even if they haven't won since 1999. I've been very bullish on this coaching staff circling that LSU game and saying, we've got to win this one. If Auburn wins in Baton Rouge, they win the fan base over. This coaching staff does. They win the fan base over. They win this team over. They start to believe that they could do things that they haven't done before under the previous coaching staff or several coaching staffs before, when you think about it. Gene Chizik, Tommy Tuberville, all of them couldn't do it. And so it's been that long since 1999. It's been over 20 years now. It's been 22 years since that's happened.
I was not alive.
That's right. I was very, very young, but 2/3 of this studio right now was not alive at the time that Auburn played LSU, which is crazy to me. But I like Auburn's chances to win at Baton Rouge for the time that they have to prepare for that matchup and the fact that I believe it's going to be circled as a very important game. It's your first SEC game. I like Auburn being more prepared for that one than I do against Penn State.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the way that I look at it is this. Auburn gets 2 weeks to tune up for their offense. And even if they win or lose in Happy Valley, that's still a fantastic experience for this team to have because it's over 100,000 fans in a really hostile road environment. And again, win or lose, they'll be prepared mentally 2 weeks later to go to Baton Rouge and to perform. And if they lose, then they'll be able to continue to tweak some things offensively, which I believe, if anything, will be the issue. If they win, then it seems way more likely that they go to Baton Rouge and beat LSU because, again, I agree with you. I think this Auburn team is more talented on paper than LSU and Penn State. So that's the way I look at it, is if you win or lose at Penn State, regardless, it's a good experience, and it makes it more likely for you to go on the road in Baton Rouge and come out with a win. I'm looking at the poll right now. Initially, it started out at like 70% Penn State, but it has since evened up to 50%, dead even at 34
wow.
votes. And there's still 17 hours left in that poll, folks. If you want to go vote on it at ESPN1067 on Twitter.
Which game is Auburn more likely to win, LSU or Penn State? That is split, like you said, at 50%. We also want to hear from you. Call in 334-321-1390. Call in. We want to hear from you about that. Which one do you think Auburn is more likely to win, LSU or Penn State? You can only choose one. Once again, the number to call, 334-321-1390. You're listening to On the Line.
You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. We'll be right back.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. 30 minutes through the show here in hour number two, and it'll be the drive with Bill Cameron coming up from 4 to 6 p.m. Stay tuned for that. On ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Follow Fox Sports Central Alabama on Facebook to keep up with the latest going on in sports. On the Line, The Drive with Bill Cameron, analysis, news, and more, all on Fox Sports Central Alabama, on FoxSports983.com, and on Facebook. That's FoxSports983.com. Continuing our make-or-break SEC series, today we will be examining the Arkansas Razorbacks, taking a look at the make-or-break factors for Arkansas football in 2021, only a handful of teams left, Lance, that we have to go through. Some good teams and some bad teams. We're taking a look at a team that I think is going to be bad in 2021, despite the fact that this is everyone's favorite game to say is a trap game for somebody. It's like, well, you know, that Arkansas team was pretty tough last year. I was also like, they were pretty bad.
They were also pretty bad. They only went 3-7. Whenever I was doing my assessment of the Razorbacks, I was trying to find different little loopholes or like specific things that I could look at and be like, okay, well, this is something that they should improve on. But overall, they were just kind of Like this is everything that a bad team would be. And I was looking at specific things. It's like, okay, well, what are make or break factors for them this season? It's just like, can they upset someone to get to 6-6?
Can we name make or break factors of a team that's already broken? Is it? Are these questions just about make or fix factors? I don't know.
Make or fix factors. I think if I had to say something specific, is Sam Pittman an SEC coach? That would be my make or break factor because you look at what they bring back.
Well, he is an SEC coach.
Well, is he a Cal?
By definition.
Let me restate. Is he an SEC caliber coach? Because you look at what they bring back offensively and defensively, 8 starters on offense, 9 starters on defense. The one game that we got to see KJ Jefferson play, he dropped 48 points and still lost, but he played pretty decent in that game at Missouri. I have faith in him moving forward as a quarterback. I don't think he's going to be fantastic, but I do think he's going to be pretty good. And he's stepping into a situation where he's got a lot of returning production around him. Granted, that production went 3-7 last season, but you could also turn to the defense and say, well, they gave up almost 35 points per game, 260 yards passing allowed by the Razorbacks last season. That was 102nd nationally. I have somewhat of a little bit of faith in Sam Pittman to be able to coach this defense up and to get them where they need to be. But I think the talent is there to be able to make a bowl game, especially offensively. My question is can Sam Pittman actually coach these guys up? And you look at their schedule, and can they get one or two upset wins? Because their non-conference slate, they still have to beat Texas. I know that Rice, Georgia Southern, and Arkansas Pine Bluff are not necessarily special, but whenever you're a team like Arkansas or Vanderbilt, you need every single non-conference win that you can get. And that Texas game is going to be really tough, and that's going to be one of the games that I look at early on in the season to kind of get a feel for this Arkansas team, because it's going to determine, in my opinion, the way the rest of their season looks. Because if they don't look competitive, I don't see them upsetting somebody else in the SEC.
Georgia Southern's no slouch now.
I've heard their basketball program's pretty good.
Alluding to my NCAA basketball 10 dynasty that I'm doing right now. We're hooping right now, man.
Yeah, y'all beat a top 10 team on the road, and they put you 50th, and they brought Georgia Tech, the number 8 team in the country, up to 4.
The respect, I know, for the program, right?
Shameful.
Signed a 5-star recruit. You know, we're building something in Statesboro, Georgia. But Georgia Southern football, though, they've beaten some teams in the past. They beat a Florida team in the early 2010s or mid-2010s. They are perennially kind of a fringe bowl team in the Sun Belt, which I've heard is also the Fun Belt and can actually beat some Big 12 schools. You know, for an Arkansas team where we don't know quite how to gauge this team from a talent standpoint, although, yes, they are an SEC team, if I was going to pick an SEC team outside of Vanderbilt for a Sun Belt school to upset, Arkansas is in that tier of team. And so you can't just get past that Texas game. And if the Texas game goes really poorly and this team is stumbling out the gates, they're 1-1, they beat Rice out the gates, then they lose to Texas. If this Georgia Southern team is feeling opportunistic and Arkansas is looking ahead to Texas A&M the very next week, you could find yourself in a tough ball game against a Georgia Southern team that's been a little up and down, but still a decent team in the Sun Belt.
And we've seen Arkansas fall apart against really bad non-conference teams in the past. They lost to San Jose State at home in 2019. They lost, I believe, to North Texas the year before. They also lost to Colorado State on the road the previous week before they played the Mean Green. I agree with you. This non-conference slate, I think outside of Texas, is easy for an SEC team, quote-unquote.
But is Arkansas an SEC caliber team?
Right. Is their coach an SEC caliber team, I think, is the question we have to ask ourselves.
Make or break factor for me here. I want to go back to KJ Jefferson. Is KJ Jefferson as good as Felipe Franks? And if you want to take a one-game sample size and a season sample size for KJ Jefferson last year, where he went 20 for 41, less than 50%, threw for 295 yards, which is great, 3 touchdowns, no picks. He also added another rushing touchdown to his credit as well in that Missouri game. I believe he had 4 touchdowns total in that ball game. You look at KJ Jefferson, yes, he looked good, but sometimes teams just don't have film on you. Teams don't know how to prepare for you. Teams don't know what make you tick. They don't know what buttons to push against you And TJ Finley looked good against some teams last year, but he also looked really bad against some teams last year as well. We don't have a large enough sample size with KJ Jefferson on one game at 41 pass attempts to say, oh yeah, this guy's as good as Felipe Franks, who had 17 touchdowns and 4 picks for Arkansas last year with over 2,100 yards and really was a main reason why Arkansas was competitive in games against Auburn, where he played fantastic against Auburn. And then you look at some other teams where they were competitive. LSU, they were competitive, only lost by 3 there. They were semi-competitive against Texas A&M, lost 42-31. They beat Ole Miss last season 33-21. Albeit, you could credit that a loss to Matt Corral, 6 interceptions. But still, Arkansas, people liked them last year because they were able to force turnovers. They played hard. They were competitive against some teams that in the past they have not been competitive, and they shocked folks. Going into last year, when you saw that Georgia was added to their schedule, you go into last year and you look at all the teams that they had to play, Georgia, Alabama, Auburn, Florida, LSU, list goes on and on. You look at that schedule, folks were like, well, there goes Arkansas, 0-10, obliterated from the face of the earth. People were terrified for this Arkansas team, and they won 3 games, which is more than they won in the SEC like the last 2 seasons combined, maybe even the last 3 years. I can't remember how many they've won over the last 3 years, but I know over the last 2 years it had been pretty poor for this Arkansas football team. So my question is KJ Jefferson as good as Felipe Franks, who was a big part of the reason why Arkansas was even able to win 3 games last year? And we don't know that, and I think I think even if he is as good as Felipe Franks, is that enough to take Arkansas past? Is that enough to take Arkansas past 1 or 2 wins in SEC play? And I don't think it is, because last year, a year where we played a 10-game SEC schedule, Arkansas still barely came out with wins over Mississippi State. I kind of feel like the Ole Miss game was fluky because Ole Miss isn't going to throw 6 picks this year against Arkansas. And then you beat Tennessee, who also you didn't expect to be horrendous. So, like, the 3 games that they won, it's not like they did it convincingly or because they looked great. It's because the other team looked bad or played really poorly. That's why they won those games. I don't think this Arkansas team is as talented as really anybody on their SEC schedule for this year. I think they're probably less talented than every single team on their SEC schedule this year. And if you were talking about being able to sneak wins out, they're going to have to.
Right. I agree. Something I will say about KJ is that he has an incredibly small sample size so far, and I agree with you. I don't think we'll be able to determine whether or not he's going to be even a decent quarterback or better than Felipe Franks just yet. But I will say this. Arkansas played 7 teams last season that gave up over 30 points a game. In the one game that KJ Jefferson played against Missouri, who gave up 32.3 points per game, Arkansas scored their career high. So whenever he was able to play against bad competition, he made the most out of it that entire season. And I know that there were probably a lot of other factors that go into that outside of just like plugging in KJ Jefferson in and him performing well in that one Missouri game. But I will say he's shown in his one game that he can throw the ball around the yard and he can be good. But I agree with you. I think Arkansas is going to have to punch way above their weight class in order to get at least 1 or 2 wins in the SEC this season.
Fun fact here, Arkansas statistically on the offensive side of the ball was better than Auburn last year. They averaged more points per game. They finished 8th in the league last year. Auburn finished 9th in that category. They averaged more yards per game than Auburn last year. Arkansas finished 8th. Auburn finished 9th in the SEC. The only area where Arkansas was not better than Auburn offensively was rushing yards per game. And just go and look at the fact that Arkansas finished 2 spots better than Auburn in passing yards per game. That'll tell you a lot about what Felipe Franks was able to do for the Razorbacks at a position where they have been abysmal before Felipe Franks got there. The talent is still not there for Arkansas. They're not ready yet. I see this as being the worst team in the SEC West. And some folks out there think that Mississippi State could be. I think Mississippi State's every bit as more talented because they're more established than Arkansas at this point. Arkansas is still rebuilding. Another make-or-break factor for this team. Does the defense improve? You look at turnovers last year. Turnover margin for Arkansas, they were +5. That was good enough for 30th in the country. That's great. Once again, though, I go back to the Ole Miss game. 6 picks. That's not going to happen again. And that early season game against Ole Miss in week 4 for the Hogs, that kind of skewed their numbers a little bit in the turnover margin throughout the rest of the year. Now, this was a rather opportunistic defense that was able to force the issue and able to create turnovers, even better than a team like Auburn, who seems to have a really hard time forcing turnovers. Auburn's been trying to work at that for years now. This Arkansas team was able to do that last year and held a pretty good turnover margin at plus five. They weren't turning the ball over a whole lot of the offensive side of the ball. Once again, you go back to between their two quarterbacks, only four interceptions. For me, does this defense improve even with those five turnovers, even with that plus five turnover margin and the defense being able to generate turnovers consistently? They still finished 10th in the SEC in points allowed per game at 34.9. Even if you improve that by a touchdown, they still gave up more points than they scored a year ago. I don't know if they can move that far up from 35 a game, even with nine starters returning on the defensive side of the ball. I don't know if they can move up from 35 a game last year into below 25, which is where they really need to be at, for me to consider this team a bowl team.
I agree with you. I completely agree with you. I'm not trying to push back on it. I will say, to put a positive spin on it,
I'm here for it.
They do bring back eight offensive starters and nine offensive starters, and they have two coordinators that are legitimate names in Barry Odom and Kendall Briles. It's just the question of whether or not they can kind of piece things together. I do agree with you, though. I think they're probably the least talented team in the West this season, and they're not quite there yet. KJ Jefferson in year three will come back and see if he's improved after getting an entire year under his belt to actually play for the Razorbacks, but I don't think this is the year. Athlon has them going 6-6. I see them as a 5-7 team. I don't see them making a bowl game.
Maybe worse. If they don't win another, I do not favor them in any SEC game on their schedule. I favor every single other SEC team that they play.
They play all eight. Texas A&M, they're not going to be favored in that game. Georgia, Ole Miss, Auburn, Mississippi State at home, LSU, Alabama, Missouri.
Favor them in a single game there. The only one where I might favor them is Mississippi State at home, but I still think that this Mississippi State team, more talented, year two, Will Rogers at quarterback. I like what Mississippi State was able to do at times last season. They won more games than Arkansas last year, and they bring back talent all over the field as well. You got ESPN FBI saying that Mississippi State should be an 8-win football team, you know? You and I both aren't totally sold on this Mississippi State team going to a bowl game either. Take your pick. It's either going to be Arkansas or Mississippi State. Both of them aren't making a bowl game, and it may come down to who beats the other one when they play on November 6th. So that was our SEC series there, our make or break factors on Arkansas. Tomorrow we'll take a look at Texas A&M. We wrap up the show on the other side of this break.
On the Line on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM and ESPN 106.7.
Wrapping up the Wednesday edition of On the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Before we wrap up the show here, let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight.
Hey everybody, it's Noah Gardner with What's On Tonight. ABC has new episodes of its Wednesday lineup. Press Your Luck is on at 7, and the $100,000 Pyramid follows it at 8. Movie selection for tonight, Mark Wahlberg stars in Shooter at 7 on AMC. In live sports, there are four NBA playoff games on television at 6 on NBA TV. The 76ers look to close out the Wizards with Game 5. At 6:30 on TNT, it's Game 5 between the Knicks and the Hawks, with Atlanta up 3-1 as the series heads back to Madison Square Garden. At 8:30 on NBA TV, Game 5 between the Jazz and the Grizzlies, and at 9 on TNT, the Mavericks and the Clippers square off with the series tied at 2. One MLB game is on ESPN with the Boston Red Sox at the Houston Astros on at 7. NHL playoff action sees two games on NBCSN. At 6:30, it's Game 1 between the Montreal Canadiens and the Winnipeg Jets. At 9, the Vegas Golden Knights look to even the series against the Colorado Avalanche in Game 2. I'm Noah Gardner, and that's what's on TV tonight.
Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl here with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Follow ESPN 106.7 on Facebook and Twitter to keep up with the latest going on at the station. The Max Roundtable, On the Line, The Drive with Bill Cameron, analysis, news, and more. Between all that, 7 hours of local sports talk radio in Auburn, Alabama. That's all on ESPN 106.7. Find the website on ESPNAU.com. Our last topic of the show here, kind of going hand-in-hand with what we talked about yesterday. Yesterday, we ranked our top five quarterbacks, or projected the top five quarterbacks for the 2021 season. Today, I want to say, let's take a look at which quarterback will take the furthest step forward in the SEC in 2021. Who is going to make the biggest leap in improvement based kind of off our list yesterday?
So I'm not going to include the guys that had playing time last season, but were not consistent starters. That includes Bryce Young and Emory Jones. The quarterbacks that I have on my list that could potentially make a step forward are JT Daniels, Connor Bazelak, Ken Seals, Bo Nix, whoever starts at LSU, Will Rogers, and Matt Corral. Those are the guys that had enough starting experience in the SEC last season for me to consider them for this list. And whenever you look at a guy like JT Daniels, if you give him a full season, statistically, he's going to look impressive at the end of the season. If you turn that 10 touchdowns, 2 interceptions over the course of 3 or 4 games,
35 touchdowns.
Right. It's not necessarily an improvement. I don't think he's going to make the most improvement out of all of these guys on this list. You look at a guy like Connor Bazelak, I don't know if he's going to necessarily make a significant jump in year 2 that's going to be more impressive than somebody else on this list, just simply based on the fact that it's Missouri and this offense is probably not going to be high octane. Ken Seals, Vanderbilt, enough said. LSU's quarterback.
Hey man, you talk about Ken Seals was like the lone bright spot of that Vanderbilt team a year ago. If he knocks off some of those interceptions, can add a touchdown or two, you're like, oh, he had a pretty good year.
But not somebody that I would consider at the top of my list in terms of like that guy really improved.
He's probably towards the top of my list. I think if there's improvement at that position for Vanderbilt, you have to keep in mind he was a freshman last year.
Yeah.
Sophomore this year. You see the biggest jump in sports typically from the first year playing to the second year playing. Not from freshman to sophomore, but first year playing to second year playing. The game's going to slow down for him a bit. Like I said, if he cuts those interceptions in half to 5, adds 5 more touchdowns. You're looking at this guy as a 17-touchdown, 5-interception dude. Maybe say he passes for like 2,200 yards, 2,300 yards. He's not lighting up the scoreboard because, once again, it is Vanderbilt, enough said, right? But you go into his junior year and you're like, this guy's not half bad.
When you look at LSU and you see the two guys that they have, you look at their statistics. We talked about it before. Miles Brennan, 11 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Max Johnson, 8 touchdowns, 1 interception. I think if you give either of those guys a full season with their receivers in that scheme, they're not necessarily going to improve significantly. I think they're going to play really, really well in that offense, but I don't think they're going to improve so much so that it would be the number one guy on my list. Matt Corral, I
don't know how much better he can get other than cutting off some interceptions.
Cut off a 6 turnover game against Arkansas and you'll be one of the best, if not the best, quarterback in the SEC. I don't see him adding more statistically that could be incredibly impressive. So that leaves who is my number one choice, Bo Nix. I think Bo Nix is going to be, at the end of the season, the most improved quarterback that had starting experience in 2020. And it all comes back to scheme. Talked about it with Bryce Young. Talked about it with JT Daniels. I'm putting a lot of stock in this Brian Harsin, Mike Bobo offense. I've been watching a lot of 2013-2012 Georgia recently. I've been watching a lot of the Todd Gurley years. Been watching that offense run. And I'm really liking what I'm seeing. If they can get Bo Nix comfortable, He can make a significant jump from 12 touchdowns, 7 interceptions to 28 touchdowns. He's going to have less than 10 interceptions this year. He's not been incredibly turnover prone outside of 1 or 2 road games in his career.
Florida and South Carolina. 2019, South Carolina last year.
So I'm putting a lot of stock in this scheme, and I think the receivers are going to be able to grow up quick. That's the reason why I have him as my number one.
They better grow up quick. You talked about the Troy player that entered the transfer portal, Caleb Geiger. Well, he's not coming to Auburn. He's going to Texas Tech. That stinks because once you mentioned that, and I was like, ooh, that would be a good connection there for Auburn just to get a veteran wide receiver in. They are going to have to grow up quick in the wide receiver room. Bo Nix was on mine as well. Well, he was the top of my list of quarterbacks taking the furthest step forward in the SEC in 2021. I thought we saw little sprinkles of improvement in his game at the A-Day game. I thought that throw where he had to move around in the pocket a bit and he threw across the field back to the sideline on Elijah Canyon, he put that to a location where his receiver had to go and get the ball, but where the defensive back could not make a play on it, and he did so under pressure. We didn't really see him throwing off his back foot hardly at all. The offensive line didn't do him any favors. I thought we saw sprinkles of it in a very watered-down offensive scheme where all they wanted to do was throw screen passes and run the football. They really just didn't turn the quarterback loose. It was a very basic game plan against a defense that's super impressive, super experienced. We knew the offense was going to look horrible in that game. That was what we were talking about as a theme going into the A-Day game. What were we going to take away when we came back on Monday? We were going to say that the offense looked bad. And guess what? The offense looked bad, but I don't think that was all Bo Nix. I think that's more of the fact that it's just a basic game plan and that he didn't have a whole lot of help from his receivers and his offensive linemen. I think we see Bo Nix take a big step forward this year. Another thing that you didn't mention that I think would be important to mention here, Brian Harsin knows what he's doing with quarterbacks, and so does Mike Bobo. These two guys have great track records with quarterbacks. I think we see Bo Nix take a big step forward. Two other guys that I do want to mention, though, Ken Seals is there. I think it's very doable for him to knock off 4 or 5 picks off of his total last year and increase his touchdowns by 4 or 5. That's only like one more touchdown per game on a Vanderbilt offense that only scored 14 points a game last year. And then I think it's very manageable to knock off that many interceptions as well. That's a huge step forward for Ken Seals statistically. You see a big difference between 17 touchdowns to 6 picks than you do 12 touchdowns to 10 picks, right? That is a massive difference. And then the second one, Will Rogers at Mississippi State. Mike Leach knows how to coach him some quarterbacks. And I can't name too many bad quarterbacks that he had at Wazoo once he had the air raid rolling. I talked about how the biggest jump you see in a player is from his first year to his second year playing. Will Rogers was just trying to get his bearings when he was inserted midseason when KJ Costello went down with injury. This is a year where if he wins the job, which I expect him to, he's going to be settled in from the start. He's going to have first team reps, which is important. He's going to have a spring to get better. This is a guy that I expect just out the gates, you're going to see a noticeable improvement out of Will Rogers.
Could be another dark horse for the Heisman. He might be focused and having fun as well.
Stop that. That's it for another edition of On the Line, the Wednesday edition of the books. Now we'll be back with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. You know where to find us.